Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. Today's the show for Tuesday, September 21st. I'm Kyle Maestri, your host, a little bit more covered and in a better physical state than last week. Today we only got one other guy with me, one football writer who never leaves the hotel without his shoes, Anthony Chang.
What's up, guys? Yeah, I'm currently wearing my replacement shoes while I'm waiting on my other shoes that I left in Tennessee.
I want you to know, everybody out there, Anthony Chang is so fly that his replacement shoes are Chuck Taylor's. Those are most people's go-to shoes, not Anthony Chang.
Those are quite lovely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Harrison,
they need a little bit of wear and tear first, though.
Yeah. No, I like them. They're looking fresh, though. Yeah. But, all right, so, yeah, we'll get right into the Tennessee game from last week. I don't want to talk too much about breaking it down. It was a really boring game. But, I mean, any couple interesting things you took out of this game watching it or talking about it after the fact?
I think that the first thing you see is that the offensive identity still hasn't been found yet. You thought that, you know, they would be a running team. You know, they found that identity in the second half against USF when they accumulated, like, those 200 rushing yards against them. But they struggled with the run this time against Tennessee. They didn't pass particularly well. They were really Dems had 26 carries, which is a career high for him. That's way too much for him. So I think they're still struggling to find that balance between the pass and run. So who knows? Maybe they'll find it this week. Maybe they'll never find it. But I think Tennessee showed that they still are not there quite yet.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to do any research. I'm really bad at my job as a journalist. But I would venture to say the last time they had 26 carries, we were speculating about this on the way home, probably Siatric Faison, if we had to guess. I don't know if Demps had 99 carries in all of 2009, is what Harrison is telling me right now. That's, so he took 26 in one game. It's pretty remarkable. It was over a fourth of what he had last year in one go. So that's a lot of carries for him. But, I mean, a lot of people want to see him get the ball more. He's obviously their best playmaker on offense. But they did a lot of I-form stuff. They did a lot of running him up the middle, and I don't know if that's how he's best used. But I like that they at least tried to get him the ball more often, even if it was a little misguided maybe.
I think it's a good sign where they're kind of adapting to the personnel. They see that maybe the passing game just isn't there, so they're running the ball a little more with the I-form. That's a good sign that they're not being as stubborn. But 26 carries for Demps is way too much. And you saw that after the game. He came to interviews limping on his right leg. You can tell that he was just worn out. You
know? I mean, I would bet a large amount of money that they don't do that again this week. I think they'll make a concerted effort to really limit him a little bit, like maybe keep him to 15 touches or so this week, more of what you usually see out of him. And it's really funny because I was obviously wrong. Before the game, we had a conversation while we were eating about how many carries Demps could have, and Chang's like, I think he can get 20. And I'm like, dude, no running back here ever gets 20. And then we had a conversation about how many he'll average throughout the year. I'm like, there's no way he'll average 15 throughout the year. And then, of course, they just go out and pound him on every single down. So you guys are right. I was 100% wrong. I didn't see that coming at all. How much do you think that –
I was going to say, I don't think that happens again all year. I think one of the big reasons they did that this game, was because it was Brantley's first road game. Maybe they want to take a little bit of the responsibility off of him. They want to depend on the run game. So I just don't see that happening again. Maybe 20, maybe hits low 20s, but 26, there's no way.
Jane, we're so connected mentally. I was going to ask you, how much do you think that was to kind of protect Brantley and take a little bit of the pressure off of him? But Brantley did have a lot of third down conversions. I don't have the numbers on me exactly, but I think Meyer was saying, and I don't know how reliable his stats are, he hit like 5 third and long completions to move the chains. So he did a good job. Adazio today talked about how they did a poor job picking up yardage on first down, and they ran the ball pretty much every first down, which the week before against USF, they had a nice mix of pass and run on first down, which he said was they were trying to do. And then I don't know why they kind of mixed up the game plan this time. Again, I don't know how much it had to do with Brantley playing in Neyland Stadium, but John Brantley needs to be, you know, a guy who's relied upon to make plays and trusted. He's not a freshman. He's not a sophomore. You know, he's a redshirt junior. He's been here for years. He's ready to go. So if they're not willing to put the games in his hands going forward, it's really going to handcuff what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I unlike many people, I think they have the tools to be a good passing team. I mean, Brantley, you see, is more of a prototypical passer. He throws a nice ball. They have the deep threat in Deonte Thompson. They have a possession receiver in Carr Moore. They have that physical receiver in Omarius Hines. They have Andre DeBose off the bench, who's, you know, supposed to be the next Percy Harvin. Who knows? They have Robert Clark, who's another speed guy. Maybe. They have the tools and the different types of receivers to have an effective passing game. I mean, I don't know why it's not working. I don't know if it's a play calling. I don't know if it's Brantley.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of everything at this point. The receivers don't make any yardage after the catch, which is something I want to write a story on later this week after I do a little bit of actual research that I didn't do with the carries. But I just feel like the receivers do a really crappy job once they have the ball in their hand of breaking tackles, making big plays. We talked about their lack of offensive identity, things that are kind of going wrong. I mean, I think it says something when you have to pull out a fake punt to beat Tennessee, a Tennessee team that doesn't look to be any good to me. I mean, they got stomped by Oregon at home. They don't have a whole lot of playmakers on either side of the ball right now. And that game still kind of could have went either way for a while until Marius Hines had a big 36-yard run on a fake punt from their own territory. So what does that say about the game or the team or state of Florida football that they needed to go to a fake here?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know for sure, but was that fake punt their biggest play of the game?
36 yards? Yeah.
It has to be. When a fake punt is your biggest play of the game against Tennessee, who maybe will win 5 or 6 games this season,
right,
that's terrible. Like, that's all you need to know right there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the offense just needs to improve. I mean, Urban Meyer said it Monday. He hasn't been happy with the production. He hasn't been happy with the fact that they're lacking that deep threat, that big playability, other than Demps, really. So I think that what he said was that they haven't really been in 5 receiver sets much this year because they've been worried about protecting Brantley up. So they've been keeping a running back, you know, back, and they've been keeping, like, 6 on the line. But look for the 5 receiver sets this weekend against Kentucky. I think they'll break that a little more to try to open things up.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I mean, obviously it's not a good sign when that's your biggest play of the game. And, you know, Urban Meyer had a quote after the game that I wrote in probably both my stories. I think one of them was the lead, where he said, you know, when you have experienced offensive players, you don't have to make calls like that. When you have guys like Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin and stuff, like, and you have a good offense, you don't have to. I mean, he didn't use the word good. He used experience instead of good, but that's essentially what he's saying. Right, yeah, an offense that can make plays for you. Yeah. You don't have to make calls like that, but he has inexperienced guys. He has guys right now. He doesn't know if they can make plays to win games, so you have to make calls like that. And I thought that, you know, that's pretty telling of where we're at right now with this team this season. And for my money, the thing that I've really been talking a lot about lately with my friends and stuff is this is such a boring team for me to watch, at least offensively. Like, the defense has come up with some turnovers and stuff, but, you know, the results have been pretty sluggish. They've been behind in the first half of mm-hmm. games, and they kind of get their you know, act together a little bit and eventually make a run. They win by, you know, 2 touchdowns here or there. I've just been bored to death watching this offense operate.
Let me ask you a question, because I didn't cover the team last season.
Yeah.
But was this team kind of boring last year, too, with the offense? I mean, I know you had Tebow, you had Spikes, and all the personalities on the team, but the offense seemed a little boring to me last season, too.
Yeah.
Do you think it's Adazio, his play calling? Because, I mean, that's when he started.
A lot of it's definitely Adazio, because a lot of it was monotonous last year, too, in the way that they would run Tebow, run the dive play, and they didn't have the... I mean, maybe it's just the fact they don't have dynamic playmakers that they had, you know, in years past. Like, Hernandez was really good last year. Cooper had some plays. But when you go back to the second championship year, that team was just stacked with guys who, you know, could make plays. Lewis Murphy, Percy Harvin, just guys who, you know, were really, really good and that made big plays all the time. So I don't know what it is, but this team especially, at least last year, I was kind of on my seat a little more because you had Tebow, so you don't really know what's going to happen on any given play, and, like, the short yardage situations are always going to be mm-hmm. a little bit exciting, but this team, I don't know what I'm watching. Like, Brantley is just, like, killing me. Like, he's not making plays, and as far as personalities go, like, Carl Johnson and Mike Pouncey are the two funniest guys on the team. They're legitimately funny, too.
And they're offensive linemen.
Yeah, they're offensive linemen, exactly. Like, all the other, like, guys who are supposed to be like the face of the team, like Jeff Demps, who I love as a player, is super boring to talk to. John Brantley is really boring. Like, all these guys are just boring guys, I feel like. The personality of this team couldn't be more different than it was a year ago.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this offense is just tough to watch. It seems like it's contagious, though, because every game the Gators play in, that offense is the same thing. It's the same way.
Right.
It's just the games have just been terrible.
You just don't have any characters on this team. Like, as fans out there, like, who are you guys talking about when you're talking about this team with people? Like, who's, like, exciting you at home? Like, you're not getting excited to, like, watch Carl Johnson play every week. So, You know, in years past, you had, like, Reggie Nelson was, like, exciting. Yeah. He's blowing people up. Major Ed is blowing people up. You had, like, a bunch of jokes about, you know, 75% of the world is covered by water, or 25% of the world is covered by water, the rest is covered by Reggie Nelson, like, million Tim Tebow jokes all the time. Like, CI was, like, a kind of, like, a lovable figure people like to watch play. I don't know. I just feel like Joe Haden was, like, all personality. Brandon Spikes, all personality. You had all these, like, really great characters on these teams, and like right now I'm just like losing my mind. Like, Ahmad Black like tries to be that guy a little bit, but he's not that funny, and like
he tries. You can tell he tries.
Yeah, yeah, he's trying to grow into that role. He makes a lot of plays. So I don't know. I mean, this team, I'm not saying this team isn't good, you know, boring can win games, but I just feel like they're a little, you know, maybe Meyer, what he was saying about we're a pounded team, we're gonna, you know, hit you in your mouth, move you at the line of scrimmage, like maybe that's what this team is now. It's just boring. Bring your lunch pail to work, Dan Werner style football. Like, I don't know what to say about it.
I just don't think, like, it's going to catch up to them at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not going to win you games against Alabama, against top-tier teams. Like, being able to win these close games is not an ability that you build. Like, it's just the way you are. Like, it's not something like we have the ability to win close games. Like, they just aren't good enough
to blow people out.
So that's something that's going to catch up to them. In two weeks, they play Alabama.
Right.
This game against Kentucky is big for them to kind of make that step, if they're going to make one.
I mean, Florida's just not that good, honestly. Like, they're not a bad team, and they're a team that can contend for the East. They might very well win the East, but just, you know, they're not the same level of team that they've been the last few years with Tim Tebow here. And it's not Brantley's fault. I don't mean that, like, that's the reason why they're not. They lost a lot more guys than just Tim Tebow. But, you know, whatever the culmination of things that have led to this, it's just not the same. It's just a little more scrappy, a little less talent. You know, the other teams could just line up and just beat guys based, you know, our guys are better than your guys, regardless of any of the other factors. And that might not be the case in the SEC anymore a little bit. That's one thing I do want to talk about is I had a big argument this weekend with one of my friends. Because he was saying, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Tennessee won this game and stuff. And I was like, I don't, you know, Tennessee's a real bad team, and they beat Tennessee 5 years in a row, now 6 years in a row. And his whole argument, and I hate this argument, you can defend it if you want, give me what you think about it, is, you know, it's still Tennessee and it's still the SEC, so anything can happen. And as we roll into the Kentucky week, it makes me think Florida's beaten Kentucky 23 years in a row.
Right.
So it's not the SEC with Kentucky. It's not one of those, oh, it's Kentucky, they're in the SEC, of course they can win. And you're getting to the point where it's like, okay, Georgia, they've beaten them, you know, 19 out of the last 23 years, whatever absurd number it is. You've beaten Kentucky 23 years in a row. You've beaten Tennessee 6 years in a row.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to lose to Vanderbilt. Like, there's all these teams in the eastern side of the – who do you have to worry about? Just I don't even know. South Carolina every year, but you're beating them too.
I think Harrison said it during the trip. He said that Urban Meyer's lost one game against an SC East opponent in his whole time at UF.
That's insane.
Two games.
Both times they were kept out of the SEC championship game by that loss.
Right. So they lost to
Georgia in 07,
right,
and South Carolina in 2004.
Right. Okay. And both of those games kept them out of the SEC championship game. But still, two SEC East teams have beaten the Gators in Urban Meyer's entire tenure here.
It's just the fact that the Gators have separated themselves from all those teams.
Absolutely.
But this year, that's not the case. So, I mean, I could agree with your friend there where maybe, you know, the Gators aren't who they used to be where they beat all those teams. They're not as good. But Tennessee's not good either. Kentucky's not good either. The SEC's just having kind of a down year. So, I mean, I kind of agree with your friend in this year just because any of the teams can beat each other because there is a lot of parity in the SEC. Uh-huh. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the Gators, at least from years past, have separated themselves from all those teams.
To me, the reason I'm more, like I said, I didn't think it was impossible that Tennessee beat Florida this last weekend, but the reason I would be worried if I were a Gators fan is because the Gators aren't that good this year. So there's not like that separation. Right. But that it's not because it's the friggin' like
no, that's
when
just,
the Gators were rolling and they were winning national championships, you know, 2008 when they were just stomping people. Mm. You were never worried, like, it's an SEC. Any SEC game could be the game that takes this team
down.
That
doesn't mean anything.
No.
It's just a conference. It's the conference name. That doesn't mean anything.
And past year's teams with past year's players don't really mean anything.
Exactly.
You know, like, you got to take it on a year-by-year basis. And if you're worried it's because Florida's not as good as they were and it's because some other teams are better, I think South Carolina has a really good shot to take the East this year. And I just hate, like, the statements like that are why I am sort of an SEC homer. Like, when I was in New York, I would talk college football with one of my friends I met up there, works for the Wall Street Journal. He's like, you're not one of those SEC homers, are you? And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? And he's like, you're not one of those people who thinks the SEC is so much better than every other conference. And I was like, no, I do think that. I think the SEC is better than every other conference.
But that's the truth. I mean,
absolutely. But I think the attitude that pushes people like him over the edge is talk like that, where it's like, SEC, any team can beat any team on any. Then why has Kentucky lost to Florida and Tennessee 20 years in a row each for each of those teams? Like, no, there are teams in the SEC, the Kentuckys and the Vanderbilts, that are the Mississippi States. Those teams aren't competing every year for two decades.
Yeah, and you can't – college football is so fluid where, like, from one year to the next, look at the Gators. They've just changed dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just – it's not the NFL. It's not a professional league where even there you have some – you know, some players that are there for a while, their whole careers. College football is 4 years, 3 or 4 years, you're out. So programs change, like, in the snap of a finger.
Absolutely.
So you can't really be like, the SEC this, the SEC that. Like, SEC could – end up being the worst conference in 10 years for all we know. You know what I mean?
It changes all the time. It's probably only going to change more with all the expansion and stuff like that. Harrison just passed me a sheet with some good research on it, some quick research. He looked at all the first down plays real quick against Tennessee. He has 11 times they ran Demps on first down. 11 times was a Brantley Moody Gillisley run, somebody other than Demps. They passed it 7 times total. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
5 incomplete passes, 2 completed passes. So you're looking at 22 runs on first down versus 7 passes.
And 2 completed passes.
And 2 completed passes. So that's like, that's just, I mean, the play calling is bad there. You're just, you have to have some kind of balance on first down. And I thought they did a really good job against South Florida against this, so I don't know why they went away from that.
If you're the other team, and you, I mean, I'm sure they noticed that. You just stack the box on first down. Of course, the Gators are not going to have success running
the
ball.
What I'm wondering is why they're having so little success passing on first down. They must be going for really low percentage passes, because those 5 incompletions were 5 of Brantley's 9 total incompletions through the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I don't understand the thinking behind 22-7. Like, that's just so unbalanced to me that I don't know what you're doing there. You're helping the defense out at that point.
Yeah, and you look at that, 2 completed passes out of 7. I mean, it's not terrible when you think about it, but when you think about the 5, they're averaging 5-point-something yards an attempt, you should be completing at least, like, 70% of your passes at that point.
Right.
You're averaging 5-point yards and something yards an attempt. That's so short. You're not taking any chances deep or anything, so the percentage should be way up for passing, I think.
Absolutely. I don't know. I would be very surprised. It's something that Adazio seems to be aware of, which I don't know how much I trust Adazio's ability to identify problems and fix them, but he did talk about this, and it is something they've made a conscious effort to correct in the past. So against Kentucky, I think it'll be, you know, more evenly distributed. There seems to be this mentality when they play certain teams, certain weeks, like Tennessee, where it's like, all right, we're just going to, like, pound it down this team's throat because we can. Like, we'll just control the clock. And Adazio made such a big deal today in interviews about how their time of possession is great. It's at almost 32 minutes. No, 30. Do you know how many minutes are? Maybe he doesn't understand how many minutes are in a college football game. There's 60 minutes in a college football game.
4 minutes more.
Yeah, if you're at 31 and change, that means the other team has the ball for 28 and change. Yeah. How much of a big difference is that? Yeah. Like, that is not insanely good time. It's fine. I don't have a problem with it. But for him to point to that as, like, man, we are controlling the clock is, what are you talking about?
And some might argue that is partly because they don't have that big play, so they have to, you know, have long drives. They don't have that big play, so you kind of maybe want that to be a little lower if you can get a bunch of, you know, 2-minute drives in there where you have a 30-yard play or something like that.
I mean, to me, it's just like, I don't really, you can kind of like reason it however you want, but to come out to the media and be like, man, we're controlling the ball for almost 32 minutes a game, that is impressive. That shows you a lot. That shows me nothing. That's BS, you know, don't smokescreen me with that. And the other thing he said is that their explosive plays have been great, which I don't understand at all. He's like, we're so explosive right now. Our explosive plays are through the roof. I don't know what he's defining as explosive plays, but there's been zero big plays in the passing game. The longest passing play all year, I think, is 25 yards. The Chris Rainey Hail Mary tip touchdown at the end.
Please.
And there's been a couple other 20 to 25-yard passes.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no, obviously, more than the Chris Rainey play, so nothing plus 25 yards.
Mm-hmm.
In the run game, you've had Demps bust a couple big ones. You've had Gillisley bust off a big one at the end of the game. I can't really think of anything more than that.
I guess the handoff is their explosive play. Well,
I don't know what he's talking about. Like, I guess we should have pressed him on it more in interviews, but he went on like a 3-minute, you know, like soliloquy on what's going on with the team. So it was, I didn't want to, he was on a roll. Nobody wanted to stop
Shakespeare-ish,
him.
Shakespeare-ish?
Yeah, absolutely. It was poetic, to say the least. But I don't know. Like, I mean, there are things that the offense, I think, is doing well, such as the red zone. This is something actually real, not like, you know, all their explosives and their time of possession. The red zone, they were abysmal in the red zone last year. They were turning the ball over all the time. Their conversion percentage was awful. And this year they've been much better, to their credit. When they've finished off drives with points, and that's big for this team because you don't know how many drives have the chance to, you know, result in points. So I give them credit for that. I think the red zone, Burton's been really effective. He ran in another touchdown against Tennessee. Brantley on third down had a big touchdown strike to Frankie Hammond in the back of the end zone. So they've done a good job once they get into the red zone.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about the offense that they've done a good job at is spreading the ball around. In the goal, in the red zone especially, they have Burton as an option to run the wildcat quarterback. They have Deontay Thompson, who can, you know, catch a touchdown. Carr Moore has caught a touchdown.
Maybe.
Frankie Hammond Jr. has caught a touchdown. Omarius Hines has caught a touchdown. They have a bunch of guys that can get it done down there.
Right.
Unlike last year, where it was either Tebow running the ball or basically Hernandez and
the shovel.
Tebow. Yeah,
it might be time to bury that shovel, by the way. They ran it again this week against Tennessee, and what they Brantley actually kept the ball, rolled it out. Like, the tight end came underneath. It might have been Burton or Hines. I don't remember which one. And he didn't even kind of look at him. He kind of ran a two-man option game with Demps or whoever was in the backfield. It went for, like, a one-yard loss or, like, no gain or something. So that play has not hit all year.
Yeah, it's not going to work. That works with Tebow because he has he can threaten, you know, he can run the ball. You have that threat that you have to account for. But with Brantley, there's nothing.
You
can play the tight end and that's it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it might be time to bury that one. With Kentucky coming up, I mean, there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing even to talk about with this game. Like, that's how I feel. I don't know how everybody else does, but like we said, they've been in Kentucky 23 years in a row. There's no reason to believe this Kentucky team is much better than those other 23. Certainly, they're better than they were probably last year and even the year before that when the Gators really stomped them. I don't expect to see like a 30 or 40 point blowout, but Randall Cobb's the name that keeps coming up for Kentucky. I'm not scared of Randall Cobb if I'm the Gators. He's never beaten me before. And I just think they cruise to another.
It's the SEC, man. It's the SEC.
I know. Any team in the SEC can beat any other team on any week except when they can't ever for 23 years in a row. So, but what do you think about this game?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, the Gators have underperformed every week. They had a close game against Miami, Ohio. They had a close game against USF, you could say. They had a close game against Tennessee. I mean, you don't know. The way this team plays, it could be a 7-point game, a 20-point game. It all depends on the offense. If the offense thinks it up again,
You think they could lose this game?
I don't think they'll lose, but I wouldn't be like, I don't think it's out of the question.
Right.
This is the best offense that the Gators have faced all year.
Okay.
So, I know that's not saying much. That's not saying much, but I mean, if you think about it, they haven't really dominated the other teams.
No, absolutely not.
If the offense doesn't put up points this game,
right.
The defense might not be able to have as much success as they have been.
I think we agree that Florida's not so good that they can't lose games like this. But I don't think there's a good chance of them losing this game at all. I haven't put it at 5%. If I had to put a percent on it, it's possible, but it's not going to happen.
I'll put 15%.
All right, so you're going to go a little higher than me. Something that Ed Ashoff said today, our friend at the Gainesville Sun, when we were sitting in the media room or the visiting locker room waiting for interviews. He said that, you know, in other years, a game like this, like, maybe you make a little bit of, like, okay, this is a classic, like, look-ahead game where they're going to just not even care about Kentucky. Who cares? We got Alabama in a week. But this team is not good, which kind of helps them here in that I don't get the feeling they would overlook any game at this point. Like, I think they do try hard to prepare, and I very much get the feel that they're going week to week, whereas last year's team, it was like, let me get through this regular season, please. Yeah. Whereas, like, now, I don't think they're going to overlook any team on the schedule, including Kentucky, with Alabama looming the week afterwards.
Let me ask you, do you think that the offense has been kind of vanilla just because they've been waiting to pull out some stuff against Alabama?
No,
I mean, they've been playing bad opponents.
No, I don't buy that at all.
You don't buy that?
If you think Steve Adazio is going to just bust out the fireworks in Tuscaloosa with, you know, crazy creative throwback double, you know, reverses,
it's
not going to happen.
Everyone said that all year last year.
Right, and
it never
happened, right?
Happen.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all, especially you have so many new guys on the offense this year. You can't afford to bust out your plays for the first time against the best team in the nation.
I would think it'd be dumb to do. I mean, I think this game against Kentucky is very important to the team. You're going to see if the Gators even have a shot at even making the Alabama game even competitive again this week. I mean, if the offense can step up and make that one step up, maybe score 40 points this week, that'll be a good sign for them and give them some confidence going into the Alabama game. But I mean, who knows?
Right, I agree. All right, Harrison's got a paper with a lot of writing on it that I'm not going to understand, so we're going to pass it to him for a second. Why don't you take us through whatever crazy scientific research you just did in the last couple minutes.
All right, after my first down analysis, I went to a third down analysis of
great.
What Florida did.
Skipped over second down. Screw second down.
Yeah,
not
second
important.
Down doesn't
don't worry
matter
about
because
it.
It's not like they gained anything
right.
on that anyways.
Who cares?
On third down, Florida had 7 completions for first down yardage, 1 completion for a touchdown, 1 bad snap that led to a punt, 1 run that was stuffed that they went for on fourth down and also got stuffed, 3 incompletions, 1 they punted, 1 they faked the punt, and then 1 they scored a field goal, and then 1 sack very late in the game on their second to last drive right before they started kneeling it out.
Right. So yeah, they did very well on third down against Tennessee, very much the opposite of how well they did on first down. But their third downs, they were great. Brantley really played well. There were a couple nice catches by Carl Moore that extended drives. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive with this team, too. I know Adazio was talking about being pretty happy with that production.
9 of these were 3rd and 8 or longer.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, if you're not picking up your yardage early, you got to get them late, I guess.
Yeah, but that's a product of the first down
failures.
So
they helped themselves a little bit on third down, but obviously you can only put yourself in those kind of situations so often and still experience success. So the offense has been talked about a lot, obviously, because there's a lot of problems. I'm a little surprised by how good the defense has been so far. Are you? I mean, what did you think about the defense coming into this year, and what do you think about them now?
I mean, people forget that the defense lost a lot of players.
Yeah,
Everyone just says, oh, yeah, the offense lost Tebow, the offense lost Riley Cooper, the offense lost Aaron Hernandez, but the defense lost Brandon Spikes, Major Wright, Joe Hayden, Jermaine Cunningham, Carlos Dunlap.
Ryan Stamper.
I mean, yeah. You look at it, and it looks like they haven't missed a beat, really. They've played really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a product of, you know, when Urban Meyer came in, and you're just seeing these, like, loaded recruiting classes where just, like, everyone's a baller, and, like, these kids are coming here and are sitting on the bench. Like, that's what you're getting now because, you know, there was a lot made of, like, it's going to be a really young team, and, like, they have all these young defensive players that they just came in this recruiting class. But a lot of the guys who you're seeing playing, I mean, you're seeing Duke Lemons, Justin Trattow, Taryn Sanders, Brandon Hicks, AJ Jones is out there. He was out there last year. Jeremy Brown's been here for 3 years, even though this is his first year really playing. Will Hill is filling, you know, is winning one of the starting safety positions after kind of splitting time for 2 years. So you're getting a lot of guys who have been in the program for 3 years, you know, prior to this, and they're just getting their chance now, you know. And I think that's, you're starting to see like the depth of those previous recruiting classes where it's not like there's just a bunch of freshmen and sophomore running around out there like there was in 2007, which I think is the main difference between this year and that year.
Yeah, I still don't think we have a concrete, like, we can't like evaluate this defense quite yet just because the offenses they face haven't been great.
No, absolutely.
But they have definitely looked impressive, and I mean, we really can't take anything away from that, you know, so.
Right, and the thing that you want to see, too, is they've had so many, they've forced so many turnovers, which is a little, like, fluky. Like, I don't think you can rely on forcing that many turnovers the whole season.
But they do seem like the kind of defense that it is. I mean, so far they look like the defense that's going to force a lot of turnovers.
I think that comes from the secondary. The secondary is obviously very good, so they're going to get their takeaways, and it's going to be hard to pass on this team unless they just lose receivers like Terrell Austin said or whatever. Where, you know, Matt Sims had 2 bombs that went for touchdowns that I could have thrown. You know, there was just nobody even close. But assuming they fix that stuff up, that secondary is kind of hard to throw on.
And Jerry Brown, I mean, other than that busted cover against Tennessee, he's looked pretty good. I think he has 2 picks already, but I think he dropped one in one of the first 2 games. He could have 3 right now. I mean, you think about that, the guy who wasn't even sure, they weren't even sure if he was going to start at the beginning of the year, could have 3 interceptions by the end of the third game. That's pretty good. So that's been one of the important parts of the success of the defense.
Yeah, on the whole, defense has impressed me. You've had a lot of young guys that have meshed well with that kind of veteran group that's just getting its first shot now. And I think they play well together as a unit, even if there's not a bunch of studs out there. But, I mean, Janoris Jenkins is as good as anybody in the nation at his position. You do have a couple players that are very good, obviously.
And you look at, I think it'll get better as the year goes along just because you have that Ronald Powell, you have Sharif Floyd, Dominic Easley, that they'll come along a little bit toward the end of the year, give them some extra depth, even though they're playing now, but they'll pick it up a little more as the season goes on.
All right, so it's early in the season. Kentucky's coming up. Not exactly the biggest game on the schedule. So I want to talk about some stuff that's not necessarily completely UF-related here. We'll say to college football, obviously. I don't want to lose any listeners here. But One of the things I want to talk about is that there are six SEC teams in the top 17 on the AP poll right now. You have Alabama at number 1, Florida at number 9, Arkansas at number 10, South Carolina at number 12, LSU at number 15, and Auburn at number 17. So what I'm going to do is let's run through these teams a little bit, and you tell me how much do you believe in this team, in their team, where they're ranked right now. All right?
Okay.
So we'll work backwards here. We'll start with Auburn at 17. Do you expect Auburn to, actually, you know what, let's go higher or lower. Do you expect Auburn to finish higher or lower than 17 in the polls at the end of the year?
Lower.
Lower. Okay.
Lower, yeah.
Lower will go as worse.
Yeah, worse.
Okay.
I do love Cam Newton, and I like everything he's done there. But they've won a couple of close games, and I don't think that they'll keep this up as the season goes along. I mean, they've been carrying the momentum of a new quarterback. They had the night game against Clemson, national TV. But I can see them losing like 3 or 4 games this year probably. So I think they fall out of the top 25 probably by the end of the year.
You'll change your tune after they beat Alabama.
Yeah, a lot of now I'm glad kind of glad Harrison said it. A lot of people do think Auburn is for you're on the Auburn train.
I have to be.
You're a passenger?
My
so you need Cam Newton. I think Auburn is overrated at this point. I mean, they barely beat Mississippi State, which I was not impressed with at all.
How many points did they put up against them?
17.
17.
And it was they got shut out in the second half.
Yeah.
They played a close game against Clemson, who's not that good this year. So I definitely think they'll finish worse. I think a lot of people really love Cam Newton right now. They're not going to love Cam Newton when he gets torn apart by a couple SEC defenses, including South Carolina this week, right?
Yeah.
So I think South Carolina probably shuts him down. They win that game. But, you know, who knows? I could be wrong, but I expect Auburn to finish worse than 17, probably drop out of the polls. I think they'll finish with 4 or 5 losses, personally.
Yeah.
But that could be a little harsh. I think they could be the third best team in the West behind Alabama and Arkansas. So, all right, we'll see. LSU at 15. You going to go higher or lower?
I really don't have many thoughts on LSU. I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're bad. I can see them maybe having like 3 losses this year, 2 or 3 losses, maybe finishing bottom of the top 25. So I'll say lower.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I feel pretty much the same way about LSU. Like, I don't think they're a great team. I think they're okay. I think their defense will keep them in most games.
Yeah.
So I think that they won't finish higher than 15, but I think they will stick in the poll. Yeah. They'll probably stick around, you know, in the 20s somewhere.
You know they're going to lose a game because of Les Miles' time management.
Les Miles is good for at least one loss they shouldn't have had, so I think that'll come back to bite them.
Spike it.
Number 12, South Carolina. You think they're going higher or lower?
I really like South Carolina. 12 is kind of high. I mean, I guess if I say higher, they're going to be in the top 10 by the end of the year. And they still have Florida coming up.
You take a push on 12. finish exactly 12.
I think it's like right around there. Like, I'll say below, but like 13, 14.
Okay,
I think they finished with like 2 losses.
Mm-hmm.
I think Florida beats them, but it'll be very close.
Right.
However, I do think they'll stay within that range they're in now.
I have no pride. I have no problem reversing field midseason, making new going back on predictions, you know. And I think South Carolina is going to win the East at this point. I think their defense is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a stat the other day that opponents are 0-11 on scoring on South Carolina in the red zone, which is like, I don't even know how that happens. I'm scoring a touchdown in the red zone. So they've just been incredible defensively. Marcus Lattimore, I think, is a big time running back that you can ride out. Steven Garcia isn't good, but he's probably good enough to not kill you in big games.
I mean, Bradley's not that good either. So.
Right. If you look at the SEC East, I think it's clearly Florida and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like Georgia's a little bit behind them, but I think it's those two teams, and I think South Carolina's going to beat Florida. I'm going to reverse field on that. So I say by virtue of them winning the East, I think they'll be a little higher than 12.
Okay.
I think they may creep into the top 10.
You're
you
national
kill me now?
Champion, South Carolina.
Spurrier's getting
after
that
they
shit.
Beat Stanford in the national championship game. I'm very high on South Carolina. Ellis Johnson's a fantastic defensive coordinator, but their biggest addition this year has definitely been their new offensive line coach. He has that unit working as a unit for the first time in years, and that's allowing Spurrier to get his running game going.
And Alshon Jeffrey, he's a good receiver. I like him.
Also on my fantasy team.
Yeah, another Harrison fantasy player.
No, I'm very, very high on South Carolina. And they play Alabama in Williams-Rice Stadium, coming off of their bye week, with Alabama coming off of back-to-back games against Arkansas and Florida.
Could be a little beat up.
You're
predicting everyone to beat Alabama, huh? Auburn, South Carolina. Who else?
I have to be right at least one.
Yeah. I do think a lot of people have said this to me. I know McCall makes this point a lot. South Carolina has a really hard schedule. I think the three West teams, maybe Harrison can check this for us, are Arkansas, Auburn, and Alabama. Those are the three West teams they play, which are probably the three best teams in the West. So their schedule is tough, but I do think they'll beat Auburn. Alabama, it's tough to pick against them, despite Harrison doing it with every single game that we talk about. So I don't know. That could hurt them some, but I expect Florida to suffer a couple losses. And probably whoever wins that head-to-head meeting will probably take it, right? All right, number 10, Arkansas. What are your feelings on them?
I think they'll fall a little below that. I like Ryan Mallett a lot. He's been in the Heisman race all year. He's a great, probably the best quarterback in the country. But they're probably going to lose against Alabama this week. That's one already.
Right.
Probably lose another one along the way. I think they'll finish in the top 20, but not number 10.
I feel similar to you. I mean, I don't think they're going to beat Alabama for the West.
Yeah.
I think they're a really good team. I think Ryan Mallett's awesome. Yeah. I'm a total believer in Ryan Mallett at this point. I think that they'll finish probably in the top 15, maybe like around 15, in between 11 and 15 somewhere. But I don't think they can sustain a top 10 ranking once conference play gets underway and they suffer a couple losses. All right, now the next team.
I'm going to predict they are going to finish the season ranked number 18. Because
so
Ryan
exact.
Mallett and Arkansas are going through 2007 Florida syndrome. They've got a fantastic quarterback who has to outscore everyone in order for them to win, and they just can't do that every game.
And that Florida team finished 18? Is that
I think they might finish 21 or something like that. I'm going to predict 18 because I feel like the SEC West can get a little bit more credit this year.
All right. Do you think they're the second best team in the SEC West?
No.
No?
By virtue of their defense.
So who do you think is the second best team in the SEC West? Auburn? Cam Newton? You're going with your boy? Someone has to be the second best team in the SEC West.
None.
Mississippi State.
No, Mississippi State is not the second best team in the SEC West.
I'm going to go with talent-wise LSU. In terms of actual finish, it's going to be Auburn.
You think Auburn's going to finish second? Okay. So you're going to... Do you think Arkansas finishes fourth?
No,
Third. Okay.
LSU's never going to play up to their talent level
All
again.
Right. Okay. Again. Right. Safe to say. All right. Number 9, Florida. What are you going to do with them?
I think below. I think they finish in the top 15. I think they lose to Alabama. They might lose... I think they lose to FSU. I think they beat South Carolina.
See, preseason I said they would lose to FSU. Now I don't know about FSU anymore. FSU's scaring me. Christian Ponder doesn't look as good as I thought he was. They got smacked by Oklahoma. They did bounce back and beat BYU. Covered the spread this week.
They beat BYU last year and covered the spread big time.
That's true.
BYU isn't great this year.
They finished, 6-6 last year? 7-6 after the bowl game.
So I don't know. The only ones I feel good about, I feel great about Florida losing to Alabama. I feel good about them losing to South Carolina. But other than that, I mean, I think they could beat FSU. I don't know.
I don't know.
If you think they're going to lose FSU, it's fine.
I think they'll lose FSU. Okay. I think it's possible they lose to South Carolina. But just because they're playing at home, you know, it's a home game against Spurrier toward the end of the year, I think they win that game. I think the one at FSU, they have, you know, FSU really hasn't been Florida in a while. I think they're due for a win, and this is the perfect year. I think they win. They beat Florida, and I think Alabama beats Florida. So with two losses, I'll put them top 15, maybe 16 around there.
All right, so you think they'll win the East.
Yeah, I think they win the East.
And then when they go to the SEC Championship game,
they get demolished.
Okay, so they're going to get beat twice by Alabama, and then they'll probably win. They'll win their bowl game against whatever inferior conference team they play.
Right.
So that puts them with three losses. Where'd you say you think they finish? About top 15?
Top 15 around there.
Okay, that matches. Yeah. I can go with that. As much as I don't believe in Florida, I mean, it's hard
don't
to
do
pick
it.
Games.
Don't do it,
it's hard, to pick games they're going to lose to. I mean, they're going to lose to Alabama, I think. I think South Carolina beats them at this point. Georgia, I think, could possibly beat them. I mean, that would be probably the next game I'd go to after in conference-wise. And then you're talking about FSU. So, yeah, I'll put them at three losses, I guess.
Okay.
And then a bowl game. So, I guess that puts them around number 15, too. I'm in agreement with you. I'll go somewhere around 15.
John Brantley, 2010 Music City Bowl MVP.
I thought you were going to go for
Memphis.
Heisman winner.
Is it Memphis? Memphis, here we come? Is that Music City Bowl?
Nashville, I think. All right.
Nashville. I
don't really
Whatever.
Care.
We're on there.
It's Music City Bowl.
All right. And then the number one team in all the land, Alabama. You going to go higher or lower than one?
Roll Tide, roll.
Are you going to push one or are you going under one? Oh, sorry.
I don't know. I don't think a team finishes undefeated this year. I think Alabama will lose one game. But if nobody else finishes undefeated, I guess... Well, Boise State is there.
That's right, they are.
Yeah. Boise State might finish undefeated.
And TCU?
TCU possibly, too. I still think with a one-loss Alabama team will still be number two. I think, even if both those...
Yeah.
Both those teams are undefeated, I think...
One-loss Alabama might be number one, you think? Even.
I'll give Boise State the benefit of the doubt, and I'll say they'll be number one.
They're nice. These BCS guys aren't trying to put Boise State and TCU in the national championship game. As I'd love to see those two teams square off for the third year in a row in a bowl game.
No, I'm saying, I think Boise State will be number one, Alabama number two.
And then TCU three.
And TCU three, So I think, I don't know what game Alabama loses. I mean, obviously I didn't pick them to lose to Auburn, Florida, but I think they lose one of those games, no matter what.
Okay, so they'll drop some game they shouldn't.
Yeah, either Auburn, Florida, I guess Arkansas this week. I don't see them losing, but I think they'll lose one of those games.
All right, I really don't want to get out of hand.
Ole Miss and homecoming game.
What's that?
Alabama will lose to Ole Miss in the homecoming game.
All right. This is ridiculous. In addition to South Carolina.
They're not six losses.
They're going to lose all these games. I don't know where I want to go with this. I'm kind of scaring myself. I'm having some thoughts I've never had before. I don't see who beats this Alabama team. They just look so good right now. But the one game, you know, you only need to lose one game to not make the national championship, which Florida proved last year. That game's SEC championship game. So if Alabama rolls the table, South Carolina, already played them once this year, can take them out. South Carolina could get in the national championship game, which is absurd. I don't want to go there, though. I can't put South Carolina in the national championship game. That's insane.
You can do it, man.
No, I'm not.
You're an artist.
Maybe. Okay. No, it's probably my preseason prediction is right. I just want to switch it to South Carolina because I had Florida losing to Alabama the first time, losing another game, beating undefeated Alabama, DQing the SEC from the title game because you have the champion of the SEC with two, Alabama who didn't win the conference with one. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to flip the teams. I'm going to go South Carolina – SEC team, they're going to have two or three losses, but get to the SEC championship game and beat Alabama and DQ the SEC from the championship game.
So the streak is over?
So I'm flipping it. The streak is over, unfortunately. I love the SEC. I think it's the best conference. I'm probably wrong about all of this. Alabama's just going to run through. They're going to finish undefeated. They're the greatest team of all time. Nick Saban's the greatest coach I've ever seen.
So if that happens, is Boise State and TCU going to the championship?
They won't do it. There's no way the BCS will do it. It'll be, you know, Ohio State's going to run the table or something horrible is going to happen. We're going to get, Ohio State versus, Oregon or something.
Do you think a one-loss Ohio
State... Or Nebraska.
Do you think a one-loss Ohio State team jumps an undefeated TCU?
Probably. Yeah. Unfortunately. I hate Ohio State so much. I hate the Big Ten. Nebraska, I think, looks real good right now. Did I put them in the championship game? I think I did Nebraska Boise.
Yeah, I think you did.
Whatever, I'll stick with that. Okay. Nebraska Boise. I'm not going to back down off of that now. Harrison, you look like antsy.
I have any number of national championship ideas.
Right now,
based on the play of Taylor Martinez and the Nebraska defense, I'm going to say that it's Nebraska versus I don't really care who, but they're going to pull a 95 style beatdown on whoever it was.
Do you think Nebraska's going to win the national championship?
Yeah, they're going to win 62-24 against Florida in 95.
All right.
It's going to be great.
I'm big on Nebraska right now. Big 12 is hard to figure out at this point, so I don't know. That's an interesting conference to follow. But I figure probably the Big 12 will get a team in. If the SEC DQs itself,
Big 12 has to.
We might be looking at Big 12 versus Oklahoma-Boise. That'd be awesome. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. There's too much football left to be played. But all right, so that we ran through those SEC teams. And now let's talk about – it's early. It's real early in the season. We only have 3 weeks under our belt. But I want to do a little Heisman talk just because I'm a little shocked – not shocked, but – little bit, we're in uncharted waters a little bit as far as number of candidates to follow, I feel like. You got Denard Robinson, who's just lighting college football on fire.
Right.
He has 559 rushing yards, which is most in all of college football. He leads college football in rushing yards.
He's on pace for 2,000 rushing yards.
And he's passing the ball, though, too, which is remarkable. He has more passing yards than rushing yards. So he's got, if we were giving out the Heisman tomorrow, consensus Heisman winner, right? Who, other than him... Who else has impressed you enough to get in some Heisman talk? Because there's not – me and Defer were talking about this a little bit today. Not a whole lot of guys are jumping out at me.
I guess Ryan Mallett is
Ryan
one guy.
Ryan Mallett, okay.
He's the second guy.
Luck?
Andrew Luck for sure.
Andrew Luck.
And the way Ingram played the first week he came in,
I'm glad you brought that up.
If he plays like that the whole year and is out, 150 yards every game – He has to be in there.
Even if he missed two games, though.
I know. We talked about this in the beginning of the year.
Right.
If, you know, that's possible. But if he plays like that, how can you keep him out?
I mean,
with the lack of candidates, like you said, how can you keep him out?
He's not going to go 9 for 150 every week.
He only had 9 carries, though.
He'll obviously get more touches than that.
If he gets 150 yards a game,
he's not going to get 150 yards
10 games or 11 games.
He plays in the SEC, Harrison. Haven't you listened to these guys? It's the toughest conference in all of football.
Haven't you seen Alabama? Oh, they're the greatest team ever. Oh, Alabama, Nick Saban. Oh.
You might not want to believe it, but they are.
Hail Saban.
I don't know, man. If you miss 2 games,
I know, it's tough.
It's tough. He's going to have to be real impressive. I think he can do it. He's going to have to be really impressive.
And this might be the year to do it. It's wide open.
And if Michigan has, like, you know, 4 losses at the end of the year, it's tough to give it to Denard Robinson.
I feel like to win the Heisman twice in a row, you really do have to back into it. And that would be a perfect example of someone backing into the Heisman.
I feel the opposite. I feel like to win it twice in a row, you got to, like, ball out. Like, you have to, like, the second year, you could argue that he backed into the first one a little bit based
Toby's
on lack of candidates and an undefeated season that he kind of rode. But I think this year, to win it 2 in a row, I think the second year, you got to ball out hard. Like, you got to just, like, take that trophy. Like, that is my trophy. You can't deny me based on the numbers that I've put up.
I agree with Kyle. I think it's kind of like, you know, when a guy gives, like, this great gift to his girlfriend the first anniversary. Like, you have to do better than that the second anniversary to impress her.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's a great comparison. Mark Ingram has set the bar, unfortunately, too high for himself.
Exactly.
With still another year of college football left to play. And he's going to have to come back and try to top that somehow in order to woo the Heisman voters.
Right.
And I don't know what he's going to do this year, but it's going to have to be super creative. And flowers are going to have to be involved, I think. Okay. It's safe to say.
I have evidence. Archie Griffin, the only player to win the Heisman twice.
Backed into it, I understand that. But this is a different era of college football. They weren't even throwing forward passes back then,
well,
Harrison.
He rushed for almost 250 less yards and a third of the touchdowns he did in his senior year.
I agree with you that I cannot argue that the one time it was done, he backed into it the second year. But I think as college football stands now, that's not the case.
I hope so.
All right. I think so.
Nothing would pay me more than to see Mark Ingram win that award twice.
Do you think Heisman voters are, like, looking to give him a second award? I don't think so. I think it goes the other way. I think they're looking not to give him.
If anyone was going to look to give someone a second award, it would have been look to give Tim Tebow the award twice.
Right, exactly. And I mean, he obviously...
He almost got it.
No, he didn't.
I mean, yeah, like, to even be invited in...
But
those
the
stats.
Only reason he was invited was because of TV ratings and crap. They had
last
to have Tebow
year, maybe, but the year before... The year before, he almost won. He had the most first-place votes.
Right, that's fine. Oh, yeah, you're right. I wasn't thinking about 2008. All right, you guys are right. I was thinking about last year. Yes, he could have done it in 2008 if regional bias didn't screw everything up.
Stupid Graham Harrell system quarterback.
Right. Yeah, you guys are right. He could have won it in 2008. But I really think right now, I don't think they're looking... I don't think... Just like I don't think the BCS system is looking to put in Boise or TCU into the championship game, I think it goes the other way. I think they're looking for reasons not to put those teams in. I think they're looking for reasons not to give Mark Ingram a second Heisman Trophy. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think, as much as I like Denard Robinson, I think Michigan's end up with like 3 or 4 losses. I think it'll kind of DQ him a little bit.
I hope and pray Michigan beats Ohio State this year. It'd be awesome. I hope Denard Robinson throws for 300 yards and rushes for 200 and just dismantles them like Vince Young style and, you know, goes to New York and lives the dream.
I mean, the other thing you can say is Tim Tebow, when he won the Heisman, team about like four losses.
But after he had the award.
And it was all on the defense. And Michigan's biggest problem right now is their defense can't stop anyone, not even UMass.
Right.
So I mean, if he puts up the numbers, you can't deny it from him. So.
Right. So we'll see what happens. I mean, you could, if it's a Toby situation where how many losses did Stanford have last year? Like 5? Or like Jacquizz, his team? You know, like once you start getting like 5 or 6 losses, that's too much. But if you have 3 losses.
The only reason that Toby Gerhart didn't win the Heisman Trophy last year is because of the Pac-10's TV deal. Like his best performance against Notre Dame when he like threw a touchdown pass and just put in one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. I had to watch that on tape delay at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I stayed up for that.
I don't know. I think he didn't win because Stanford wasn't really a national player. As much as I like Stanford this year, and I fully endorse Andrew Luck if they win the Pac-10, he does great.
This is the problem with the Heisman Trophy system. Everyone's looking too much to team success, I feel, rather than paying attention to what the individual is actually accomplishing.
But, I mean, it's in the end, isn't it, about winning games? Especially in football, like in college.
It's the best player in college football. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win every game.
So then,
the best player in college football could play on a 6-6 team.
That's fine, but you can't argue that Toby Gerhardt was the best football player last year. Like, Mark Ingram was better than him.
Would you like to look at the stats?
All right, we'll save that for another day. I mean, he had a good year, but I wouldn't say that was the reason he didn't win it. I think Ingram deserved it. We all, like, pretty much predicted that Ingram was going to win, right?
I mean, but where do you draw the line on, like, I don't know. The best player argument is, like, really tough, I feel like, to make, because you're playing different conferences.
I don't feel that you can make the argument that Ingram was the best player because there was another running back on his team who was really would have been just as good if he had the same number of kids.
You don't know that. None of us know that for a fact. None of us know that for a fact. You can't possibly say that for a fact.
Look at the stats from the national championship game.
Okay. It's one game. That's one game.
Look at their season stats. He's still Trent Richardson, I think, was almost a yard less per carry than Mark Ingram last year. And Mark Ingram had way more carries than him. So he had the chance to boost those numbers.
You can't say it. It's like all hypothetical stuff.
Right. We don't know. You could be right, but we don't know that, to be
sure. Toby carried his team.
That is interesting, though. 6-6. I agree that, like, I hate when it just goes to, like, the undefeated team's best player. Like, Troy Smith winning it, like, really aggravated me because Troy Smith shouldn't have won that award.
Jason White winning it in 2003.
Yeah, Jason White. I mean, there are just guys where it doesn't have to go to the best team's best player, which it does most of the time. But, I mean, if you're looking at a 6-6 team, it's hard to pull a guy off.
And then
they could have worked to nobody like they did in 2005.
Yeah, sure. Just like 2000.
And if you're in a 6-6 team, those big performances are coming in basically meaningless games. So they're not getting the attention. They're not getting the notoriety as the guy who's getting 150 rushing yards and they're undefeated. The team's undefeated.
The problem with Heisman voting a little bit too is that there's no clear definition of exactly what you're voting for. But I mean, me personally, I do put a little bit of the MVP factor on it. Like, not over the top. Like I said, like, you know, anybody who wouldn't have voted for Tebow in 2007 because they had three losses is ridiculous. But I do put some of that on there. If your team's 6-6, how important are your stats? Because if you pull those stats off a team, how much worse are they going to be anyway? So
my thing is, like, let's say you have a guy in the NBA averaging 30 points a game, but he's on the second to worst team in the NBA. He's not going to win the MVP.
Right. But that, I mean, I guess that's kind of the argument is, like, what exactly are you looking for in the Heisman? Are you looking to identify the MVP, the best player, the best statistics? You know, like, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of votes differently on it. So with that, we're going to move into our Gator Guarantees, which Harrison was kind enough to look up from last week because I certainly don't remember and didn't do any research. So, Harrison, why don't you hit us with what we said, how right or wrong we were.
All right. Well, this was in the week leading up to the USF game. Anthony Chang predicted that Deontay Thompson would drop at least one pass. He was right because he picked the single most completely obvious thing that you could possibly pick to guarantee.
What pass did Deontay drop?
Remember, there was like one over the middle, like in the first half. He had it in his hands and dropped it, remember?
Oh, yeah.
It was like wide open. It was like a 20-yard pass.
Okay, you're right.
I mean, that stuff happens every game.
Yeah, it's guaranteed. It's a Gator guarantee that Deontay Thompson will drop that pass.
And
Tyler, what did he hit us with?
Tyler said that Matt Elam would not only emerge as the nickel corner and shut his guy down, but he would get an interception. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen because Matt Elam didn't get a pick.
No. Tyler went on a weird ramble about how Matt Elam's the bomb, but
we pressured him into
because you have to have something account. I don't want to have an argument the next week on, like, did he or did he not, yeah, like, so shut down the guy. Yeah, exactly. I need a concrete thing that's going to happen. So no points for Tyler.
Yeah, he does not grade it as a champion.
No, absolutely not.
And Kyle, you said that Amarius Hines and Jeff Demps would both score touchdowns against USF. You were half right because Jeff Demps did. Amarius Hines did not. Partially because Jordan Reed, who played tight end, got a nice little jump ball in the end zone.
Right, and partially because they refused to get Amarius Hines his required amount of touches. Kid made the best play of the game against Tennessee, so hopefully he gets more involved. So I get half credit on that one. I don't know. I'll take a zero. It's fine. Both things have to happen. All right, so this week you got one. You want me to start?
I can start.
Go ahead.
You're going to disagree with this, but I'm going to say that
Sean Brantley touched for 400 yards and 7 touchdowns?
No, the opposite.
Oh.
I think that the Gators, I think the game between the Gators and Kentucky will be within 10 points, either way.
Okay.
I think it's going to be either the Gators win by 10 points or fewer, or Kentucky wins by 10 points or fewer. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. I think it's going to be a close game, which is for the reasons I stated earlier.
Okay.
So that's going to be my Gator guarantee.
I'm fine with that. That's a pretty good one. All right. I'm going to go ahead. It's like I'm going to take a parlay here. So all these things have to be just like the Dempsey and Hines thing. It doesn't count. I was wrong because I got half of it wrong. I'm going to say that Auburn loses to South Carolina, Alabama beats Arkansas, and Florida beats Kentucky. So all three of those games, I'm going to go ahead and go on record as I need all three of those to happen for me to be right. Harrison, you got anything you want to throw in? It's only a two-man today, so I'll let you get one in if you want.
Hey, you guys are going to have to give me a shot at this every week because you all are not grading out as champions all
Look,
the time.
You did some great research today. You added to the podcast. I want to reward you with a Gator guarantee. It's a privilege, not a right. All right.
I'm a little bit insulted by that. Well, here's my guarantee.
Okay.
John Bradley throws for 400 yards and four touchdowns. Here's my reasoning why.
You're being serious.
I don't know.
You're not.
I don't remember who it was, but there is some website that they have this mathematical formula they use to determine the best and worst performances by a team in all of college football. The last 2 years, the best performance in a single year has been Florida versus Kentucky, and the worst performance on the other end has been Kentucky against Florida.
Right.
So I'm going to say that Florida just has their number right now. They don't exactly have Andre Woodson back there to score a ton of points. Randall Cobb can only do so much.
Jared Lorenzen's not fitting or walking through those doors.
Walking, I'm pretty sure they had to.
Yeah, wheeling him through.
Reach it up and shove him through. But, I mean, Brantley can do it. He showed last year against their defense he could make some nice throws.
All right, so give me some real stats here. You can back off that a little bit. Give me some actual stats you think Brantley could hit in this game.
27 of 40 for 318 yards, four touchdowns, and one interception.
Who's the receiver that's going to ball out this game?
Because if Brantley, Hines.
Amarius Hines?
Yes, okay. I like that. All right.
I've been on the Amarius Hines bandwagon for a while now.
Okay. That's right. Big fan. All right, it's 27 of 40, 318, four touchdowns and an interception. I hope it all comes. I hope you hit those all exactly right.
That'd be great.
That'd be super impressive. If you get those numbers right exactly, you have full creative control over the podcast for the rest of the season. All of those numbers have to be right, then.
Can I get like a margin of error?
No, absolutely.
I'm not. Minus 5 yards.
Much like the Heisman Trust, I'm not looking to give you the podcast for the rest of the year, but I'll let you have it if you take it. You grab control of that award like Mark Ingram has
to. I'm going to have to like leave a little note in his locker.
Please get the statistics.
All right, so we'll wrap the show up right now. Nothing else to say. I think we did a good job touching on a little bit more interesting stuff this week. Next week,
everyone needs to check out my awesome gallery of the pictures from the Tennessee game. It's on our website. I also tweeted it.
At Alligator Photo?
I haven't tweeted on Alligator Photo yet.
It's
on my H Diamond
business,
photo.
Man.
It's going to be on my Alligator Photo one once I remember what the password is.
All right. Well, you can go to alligator.org/sports or alligatorsports.com or .org and check out those. Any feedback from today's podcast, anything else on your mind, send it to podcast@alligator.org. You can hit us up on Twitter @Chang_reaction @KMastry. Next week, we're going to get back to a rigid formula. Me and McCall talked about it. We got some ideas we want to try to hit on, bring the podcast a little bit more to life. Some of it has been a little dry lately, and we've only hit one a week, I think, the last 2 weeks. There's only four of us now. We have Harrison producing, which means we have to get more people on the same page to get it together. But no excuses here. I'm not making excuses. I'll take it all on me. But from here on out, I promise you guys, regular podcast schedule. We'll try to record probably Mondays and Thursdays for the rest of the semester if we can help it. So
no ceilings.
No ceilings for this podcast. Absolutely none. You cannot put us in a box. So with that, we're out.
End the show, Barry.